This is a HeadGum Original.
Evan, do you know what our listeners at home probably aren't thinking about right now?
What are the ingredients to McDonald's special sauce?
Huh. That's probably also one of the things they weren't thinking about. But I was thinking they probably also aren't thinking about their own mortality right now. But guess what? They're going to be thinking of it for the next 1 hour of Punch Up the Jam.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam. Punch it up. Punch up the jam.
Punch it up. Punch it. Punch it.
Punch up the jam.
Slap the bass.
Punch up the jam. Punch it up.
Slap up the bass. Slap it up. Slap it up. Slap it. Slap up that bass. Slap it up. Slap it up. Slap it up. Yeah. Slap it the bass. Slap, 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 slap.
That's so unpleasant to me. I'm just not joking. You can't do that anymore, or I won't do the podcast if you keep doing the slap bass like that.
If I do what? This?
You can't play the slap bass like that. You can't.
The reason I slap at a bass on the soundboard, reason I slap at a slap a bass soundboard button is,
you know, just me being open to life.
Ah, no. No, the joke was funny.
I have used your own weapons against you.
Oh, that joke was funny once you hit the David Guetta somewhere.
You told me about David Guetta.
I really despise the slap bass, and I think in the future you're going to be able to gauge my mood by how funny I think it is. And if you looked at my face while you were playing the slap bass, you would have known that that was the closest I'd ever gotten to, not figuratively, but literally quitting the podcast. And don't do it again unless I'm in a good mood.
You're the one who gave me the David Guetta clip.
Congratulations, you played yourself.
But I didn't give you this slap bass clip. I don't know where you got it, but I'm gonna find it and I'm gonna delete it. I'm gonna go into our shared cloud folder. Just delete. So this is Punch Up the Jam. This is the podcast where we listen to the greatest songs of all time.
Mm-hmm.
We think about them. We talk about them.
We dissect them.
We dissect them. And then we make them a better song every week. We take each song and we rewrite it to be better than it ever was before, indisputably. I am one of your hosts, Andrew Gregory.
And I'm Evan Gregory, the other host.
And we are talking about a song by the band Kansas.
Okay.
A song, Dust in the Wind, that is near and dear to my heart. I remember like so many afternoons, like coming home from middle school. I'm like 11 or 12. It's like that period of your life where you're starting to like move away from just like your parents' music taste, but like not that far away from it. And you're like somehow getting to other music. Maybe it's your friend at school. I think you might have gotten me into Kansas as my older brother. Maybe Will Farmer, your friend, got me into Kansas. But just like sitting there listening to this song and thinking to myself as an 11 or 12 year old, this is the deepest song ever.
You've summed up both the appeal and the Achilles heel of this song.
Yes.
This song, Dust in the Wind, is middle school deep.
Yeah, basically, it's the perfect song to play a 10-year-old and have a 10-year-old or an 11-year-old be like, will my life have meaning? Is the like for a 10-year-old to be like, wait a minute, last year we put all those things in the time capsule that's going to be opened in 100 years. I'm not going to be here in 100 years when they open the time capsule.
You won't be around to hear them read your poem.
Yes. But I don't know. It's not like I was a moron for liking it, though. I mean, this song is generally loved. It's Kansas's biggest hit of all time. They had a lot of albums that were really big hits. They have albums that are like multi-platinum. They were this huge touring band in the 70s and 80s. They would sell out Madison Square Garden and all the other biggest venues you can play in America. But for whatever reason, I mean, they're usually playing like these upbeat, like prog rock, organ-driven, like stacked harmony songs, like okay. Carry On My Wayward Son.
Carry on my wayward son, there'll be peace when you are done.
For whatever reason, this spare ballad about the pointlessness of being human is what like broke through and became a single. It like hit the pop charts, it hit the country charts, and like just became their biggest single of all time.
Probably because they have a name that's just a state. Everyone in Kansas is obligated to love this band. Everyone in the whole Midwest.
I will say, I think if a band was named Kansas in 2022, I would assume that they were from like Los Angeles or Vancouver or Toronto. And it was kind of like an ironic thing, like, oh, Kansas. I feel like this has like big bicentennial energy to me. We're like, even hip, even like hippies were like, God damn it, it's 1976 and our country ain't perfect, but we've been here and we're from Kansas. These guys were like wearing it loud, wearing it proud. Like four of the six of them were from Topeka.
So they are actually from Kansas.
Two of them moved to Topeka or like met them touring. And they like they went through like a couple weird formations of Kansas. They were like Kansas for a while, and then they were this band called White Clover, and then they broke up, and they were Kansas and White Clover at the same time, and White Clover and Kansas would reform and break up, and they finally ended up in like the third lineup of Kansas. Kansas 3, as the Kansas fans calls it, which is like an amalgamation of Kansas, which was a little bit of a weirder band with like the more weird lyrics and the weirder music, mm-hmm. and White Clover that was more of a, like a heartland rock band. And somehow, like, Kansas made both those things happen. Like, the weird prog rock thing where you're stacking, like, seven weird harmonies over an organ. But also, there's just, like, this, like, country violin in the middle of it.
There's just a lot more country elements in American rock music at that time, based on how far we were removed from country and Western as a country, yeah. probably.
Yeah, this it's weird when you listen to their albums, they're landing like somewhere between like the band from Canada, like in terms of like their American kind of like roots influences, uh-huh. and like when I think of like the most prog rock band of all prog rock bands, I think of Yes, the British band. And if you listen to a Kansas album, you're like, this is landing somewhere between like Levon Helm and the band Yes.
Well, the Yes is only the most prog rock band you can think of because they're the most proggy thing that could make it onto the charts with Owner of Lonely Heart. The really proggy rock bands just progged themselves right out of contention.
Yeah.
They progged themselves off the charts and right into the dustbin, and that's probably fine.
I've never heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, you never heard of them. I like that there are some like deep Kansas fans that you're already citing. I've already learned way more about Kansas than I ever knew, and the Canheads are referring to this iteration of the band as Can 3.
Kansas
are
3,
the Kansas
yes.
fans Canheads, or are they just Dorothy's?
I don't know. They're Toto's.
Well, then what are the fans of Toto? Totino's
wow.
pizza rolls?
Oh, makes you think.
If you're a fan of the band Toto, you're a Dorothy. If you're a fan of the band Kansas, you're a Toto.
Okay.
But if you're a fan of the fictional band Dorothy that I just made up,
okay.
you're a Belieber.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
So simple. The double acoustic guitars playing the same finger pick progression. What are you feeling right now? What are you feeling before the lyric comes in?
I mean, you already know that this is a heavy song. There's just something about this minor key and the finger picking where you're like, get ready to really do some thinking about life.
Yeah. You're driving your DeVille across the windblown steppe of Kansas. The Great Plains stretch out before you, looking through your bug-strewn windshield.
Yeah.
Thinking about your breakup. You got a lot of regrets, and one of them is not buying a new muffler.
No, I will say a couple weeks ago, we talked about, in the episode about levitating, the mm-hmm. Dua Lipa episode, we talked about how the first thing the producer of that song ever played on the synthesizer he bought, the synthesizer he desired so much,
yes,
was the chords of Levitating. And I compared it to another world record, kind of like first thing you ever played on an instrument was an amazing hit.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing Andre 3000 ever played on an acoustic guitar became Hey Ya. And
really?
I found out this is basically like the first thing this guy ever played on the acoustic guitar.
What?
He was switching over from being like a keyboard organ guy. He was like teaching himself to play acoustic guitar and would sit around and play this in his house. Like, this is after Kansas was wildly successful. And he said in interviews, like, one thing I was dealing with is, like, I finally had everything in life I wanted. I had all the material objects I wanted. I had all the success I wanted. And he's sitting around his house playing this sad-ass song, learning to play acoustic guitar. And his wife basically was like,
wait, so this was the singer who was only a singer before?
I think,
why is he learning this now?
I think, like, every prog rock band worth their salt, there's not just one singer, Evan. Okay. It's reductive. It's reductive to talk about prog rock bands. Talk about one singer, you know? One guy sings one song, another guy sings another song. They're all singing stacked harmonies in the chorus.
Sure.
This
yeah,
is
you
one
have,
of the singers.
You have one guy just doing the bird calls.
He was one of the main two songwriters. He was the main songwriter from Kansas. The other guy was the main songwriter from White Clover. They joined. He was the weirder songwriter. He started learning to play the acoustic guitar. This is his exercise. And his wife basically was like, oh, I like this. Like, you should finish this song. And then they were even wrapping up their fourth album. And they needed one more track. He played it for the rest of the band, basically like, well, I have this. I don't really think it fits our band. And everybody immediately was like, we're putting it on the album. And he fought them. He was like, nah, it's not really a Kansas song. It's not 10 minutes
oh,
long.
Sure.
It doesn't
oh, sure.
have stacked
oh, I bet
harmonies.
He, oh, I bet he fought them real.
You think so?
Oh,
you think,
he really, oh, you can. You think don't make me sing. Don't make me sing. No, no, not me.
I bought
oh,
it.
Please, fellas. Well, okay.
No, if the video is true, he is not maybe not the guy who's singing it. It might have been the other guy who sung it. Maybe he was just so bad at playing acoustic guitar, he couldn't play acoustic guitar and sing at the same time. That could be it. But
these guys are so proggy, they don't even have names. We don't even know these guys' names. It's the other guy. I will say, it does seem like something that is the first thing you learn on acoustic guitar. I'm really glad you said that, because I'm now realizing that he's playing the chord. It starts on the C major, right?
Okay.
And then back to the A minor. That's like maybe the first or second change you ever learn when you're learning your brand new acoustic guitar,
down.
Open chords, because the C major fingering is almost the same as A minor. You just move the one finger to
yeah.
release the A
yeah.
string, right? Like, you're, this dude was definitely, I buy that story.
Yeah,
I buy that story.
But one of the reasons you're learning it is because it's so easy, but the other reason you're learning it is because it just sounds so good. Walking down from the major one to the minor six, that's just boom, what music boom, is, baby. Boom. Walk it down.
You know what? And then it sounded so good. You know what it made him do?
I closed my eyes only for a moment, and the moment's gone. All my dreams pass before my eyes a curiosity.
Oof. I close my eyes only for a moment, and the moment's gone.
I mean, I almost want to be cynical about that. I want to say that I think that is cheesy and bad, but mm-hmm. those first two lines just hit for me.
They can both be true, man. This is really cheesy, and it ain't not true.
And this goes into the category of we were talking about this with Tom Petty with Jason and Kristen. We're like, if you read a Tom Petty song off the page and we're like, hey, is this going to be a good song? I think 80% of Tom Petty songs you would be like, no, this is going to be really bad. But there's just something about his melody writing that can elevate perfectly a relatively cheesy lyric to be like an iconic lyric.
Mm-hmm. She was an American girl?
Yeah. And similarly, like, just the melody writing here is so perfect that I close my eyes only for a moment, then the moment's gone. Mm-hmm. It's just, it touches me. I think it is great. Now, I mean, the next two lines, pass before my eyes a curiosity, I think that's a little bit of a stretch, frankly. But it's still working. It's working.
You don't know what his dreams are. I bet his dreams are pretty freaking curious, man.
Yeah, everybody's...
This guy's been on stage at MSG. Went backstage in the 70s doing some real shiite.
That just seems like filler to me. His dreams are passing before his eyes. What's the curiosity? His dreams are a curiosity, or it's a curiosity that his dreams are passing by his eyes so quickly? That's not clear to me, and that's a fault in the song. Because, as the song will later explain, it's not a curiosity that his dreams are passing before his eyes. That's the normal state of human affairs.
You've sufficiently dizzied me.
Dust in the wind. All they are is dust in the wind.
That's it. That's all you need to know.
Oh, they only hit it with us once? They don't even do it twice the first time?
I think, well, I'll just play from where we left off. I think it's just the once, man.
Wow.
Yeah, now we're into verse two.
back into the left. Back into the left, Evan. Hit it back to the refrain.
Okay, back to the refrain.
Back to the refrain.
Just to convince you that I didn't skip anything. Here's the refrain. I think it only happens once, but it's so powerful you only need it once.
Okay.
Dust in the wind. All they are is dust in the wind.
It's so simple.
Same old song.
Into verse two.
Just a drop of water in an endless sea.
That's all you are.
And
man.
now you're getting those prog rock stacked vocals. That's what I'm talking about.
This is not too proggy. It's just a little harmony.
It's not proggy, but it's the stacked harmonies are there.
You're haunted by prog rock. You're seeing it everywhere, man. You're seeing the prog everywhere.
And these
are just two dudes singing country, buddy.
Yeah, I guess the album placement and the greatest hits, this is probably coming right after Carry On My Wayward Son, and I just can't help but see the reflection of Carry On My Wayward Son in this. You're right, it's not that proggy, but they do have these stacked harmonies. It is a band that everybody sings in almost. But I also just say, like, there's something so simple about that refrain melody, but so haunting. What is the chord they hit there at the top of the refrain, Evan? They go to a new chord there.
I don't know. Is it the four? Let's see. Yes, that's D major, which is the four. And in the key of A minor, it's supposed to be minor, D minor. And so to have that D major at the top of that chorus, right here, dust in the wind, sounds really fresh. That's a new chord. Yes. And in fact, we just heard it in minor. Da-da-da-da-da. There was the D minor just before the end of the verse. And then they flip it to major, and it's like, whoa, philosophical insight.
The oldest trick in the book, starting the chorus on a different chord. It's just the oldest trick in the book, and it works. You heard it here first. That's the secret chord that David played the Lord. Just a different chord at the top of the chorus. And the Lord was like, whoa there, buddy.
What would the major lift sound like in Dust in the Wind?
What is the major lift? I don't know. Is the major lift a known chord? I thought it was a secret chord.
It's the secret chord. Yeah, they don't just tell you this stuff.
Is it like a two major?
Well, it could be any chord. I think a major lift could be any chord that your ear thought was supposed to be minor. So in this case, it would be like, if you went like, dust in the wind, oh yeah, dust in the, woo! Or maybe a Picardy. Oh yeah, dust in
the... The major lift. Okay, I just want to put a pin in it. I think it would be great to punch up Hallelujah because it absolutely killed me when at the 2020 RNC on the White House lawn, there were not one but two versions of Hallelujah sung. Hallelujah, I think, is just a song about Leonard Cohen boning. And so it was very weird to me that there are all these religious versions of Hallelujah being sung on the White House lawn in honor of Donald Trump. And maybe if we did a punched up version, that sort of thing wouldn't happen anymore.
Are you telling me that Hallelujah is about boning?
I think Hallelujah is about boning, but enough about Hallelujah. This isn't an episode about Hallelujah. This is an episode about Dust in the Wind.
Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind.
Oh, that little vocal flip. They're good singers, man.
Ooh, Frankie Valli, eat your heart out. That falsetto. Angelic.
I mean, if you didn't know, Kansas just randomly has a violin player. He's just always going off in the middle of prog rock songs. Now he's going off in the middle of this sad ballad.
Great showcase for your violin player. Give him a little break in the middle of this ballad.
I mean, I just urge you, if you don't know what the band Kansas looks like, I urge you to go look at a picture of them circa 1976, 1977. They're just some of the greatest rock and roll promotional photos ever taken.
I have a feeling that they probably look exactly like what I expect. Very hairy white men. Oh, I've got to pause it right here, my friend. This whole song is about mortality. It's about the passing of time and how nothing lasts.
Yes.
And he finally takes a stand right here. Don't hang on. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. I got to break it to you that that don't last either.
Yeah, I thought you were going to stick with him there. I thought I was ready to zag on you, but I'm going to zig with you. I 100% agree with you. I've got some bad news for the band Kansas, which is someday the very wheat fields of Kansas that fed these young men in the 1950s and 1960s, mm-hmm. they're just going to blow away, not on the winds of Earth, but on the winds of the cosmos.
The very earth from which we mined the metals that eventually became your Cadillac DeVille cruising down I-50.
Man, they were really dropping some philosophical knowledge on 11-year-olds, but I feel like we're really dropping some philosophical knowledge here on 13-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Watch out, 13-year-olds. One day, your earth is going to blow up. I will say, one of my favorite things about the basic philosophy of Dust in the Wind is, I mean, it is just such a basic idea. The writer, whose name is Kerry Livgren, it's interesting, like a lot of the sourcing around what inspired the song says that it was the Old Testament, but I
this
think,
song was inspired
yes,
by
but I
the
think
Old
that's extremely fake, and I think the reason
okay.
that it's extremely fake is that because in the 80s Kerry Livgren became a born-again Christian, quit Kansas, started a born-again Christian band, and became one of the like first stars of Christian rock radio. And so my guess is that like all of Kerry Livgren's fans from like the 80s and 90s and 2000s are going on to sites like Wikipedia and being like, this book is inspired by Ecclesiastes.
What?
Because Kerry Livgren is a Christian, and so am I.
I love this theory that like Christian rock fans that found this guy later
yes.
are retconning Kansas.
Yes, they're retconning the whole song to be about like basically like a Jesus song about Dust in the Wind. It was probably in something like that is in the Bible. But in concurrent interviews, Kerry Livgren was like, I was a spiritual seeker, and I was reading a book of Native American poetry. Like, he literally says, like, dust in the wind. Like, all we are is dust in the wind. He, like, cribbed from this book of, like, anonymous Native American poetry, and just the song came from that. Like, this exact quote.
And it has been wowing stoners ever
yeah,
since.
But it's just, like, it's very basic. It's deep and basic and dumb at the same time. Like, there's the big joke in one of our favorite films of all time, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Do you remember this?
It's a little-known indie film. I don't know if a lot of people know about this movie.
But you remember the scene with Socrates?
Of course. Yeah, the philosopher Socrates.
Yes, because they're trying to explain. They're trying to talk to Socrates, but they can't talk to Socrates.
Mm-hmm.
And then they realize that the idea of Dust in the Wind, the song, is so basic and mm-hmm. so universal that they can communicate it to Socrates, like, basically with like hand gestures or with like...
It's about the passage of time. It's about the insignificance of man, and anyone yes. can understand that.
They pick up a handful of dirt and just like blow it.
All we are
you pulled
is dust in the wind, dude.
And what does Socrates think?
Dust.
Okay.
Wind. Dude.
That's Bill blowing the sand.
Socrates had never thought of that before. They changed the course of ancient philosophy and modern philosophy as well mm-hmm. by just picking up the sand, blowing on it, and pointing it to Socrates and saying, dude, dust, wind, dude.
We owe a lot to Bill and Ted when you think about all the things in our society that have descended from the philosophies of Socrates.
Yeah, what would our modern philosophy be like if they had not taken Socrates to a aerobic class led by Joan of Arc in the San Dimas Mall? Okay, major rhyme foul. Major rhyme foul for me there. You can't say your money won't another minute buy. Your money won't buy another minute.
Nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky, and all your money won't another minute buy.
You can't. You thought you could get away with flipping it to get to the sky buy rhyme, but we caught you.
I can get
we
down.
We caught
with
you, Kerry Livgren.
I can get down with middle school philosophy, but I cannot get down with middle school rhyming.
And he thought he could bury it in the third verse. He thought by the third verse we wouldn't be paying attention. Nope. This is Punch Up the Jam, and we're gonna make that rhyme better in our version of the song.
I don't have a good soundboard item for bad rhyme. I'm going to get one or make one. So for now, you have to hear this 8-bit empathy power-up. You know, it's funny that Kerry Lifgren is learning to play the acoustic guitar, and this is the first thing that he really tried to play because it's so simple and beautiful. And this, I read that the same thing was true of the bass player who learned this.
See, my mood is turned around. I thought it was funny now.
That happens to all victims of abuse, I'm told. Have we gotten to the end of the song?
I don't think so. I think we're getting like a mega refrain that finally like expands from a refrain to like almost a proper chorus. It's just a bunch of dust in the winds.
Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind.
All we are is dust in the wind.
Just
ooh, the echo. The echo makes it deep.
I like it because you got a lot of guys agreeing.
They know
sort of like they
die.
Just heard this idea for the first time as well, and they agree.
Yeah, there's appear to be bongos here. A little like dissonant, like guitar there that we haven't heard before. That high little falsetto. But you know what I'm not hearing, Evan? You know what I called wrong? That high
wind
falsetto.
Sound.
I'm not hearing wind sound. And you know what I was thinking of? I was thinking of Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd.
Okay.
That ends with the wind sound and it gives me the occasion to say, I feel like the number two acoustic guitar songs when I was like attending summer camp that someone would be learning, like first song you learn on acoustic guitar, I don't know what it is now. One, Blackbird. Two, Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. I don't know why this song fell out of contention. It's the first song that Kerry Livgren knew how to play on the acoustic guitar. It seems like this would be the perfect summer camp song for someone to learn because it's very easy learning guitar and makes everyone think you're very deep.
Yeah, absolutely. You're a teenager at summer camp courting other teenagers. You want to display your finger stylings on the guitar,
yeah,
your sonorous voice, and your command of the idea of mortality.
Yeah, and like if you're good, you impress people. If you're not that great yet, maybe you attract some older boys or girls who already play the guitar. They can give you lessons and, you know, usher you into their social group.
This is turning into a really strong endorsement. Kids, practice this song.
I want to skip back. I want to go back into the left here for a second,
uh-huh,
to one part of the song we kind of breezed by.
Okay.
Back because- and to the left.
I never noticed before the very tail end of this song. I really never have noticed this before, that really high,
note,
wistful,
yeah,
falsetto that's, yeah, way in the background. That has the spirit of the wind.
It
it's
does.
Not the sound effect of a wind, of a blowing breeze.
Yeah.
It has the spirit of the wind.
Yeah. I mean, the song is just great. The song rules. Can it be improved? Yes. And mm-hmm, one thing I thought about a lot with this song,
mm-hmm,
is like I've talked about at some length today, I feel like it's the perfect song for an 11 or 12-year-old to think about life and how we're all dust in the wind. Maybe someone would poo-poo me and tell me I'm too cynical and that's something I can still be thinking about at my more advanced age now.
Yeah, great thing to listen to when you get sent to your room to think about things.
Have I truly internalized the idea that someday I shall be dust in the wind? Like, I could say I have, but I probably have not.
That's the thing about it, man. You can't fully understand it until you are the dust.
Yeah, but this is like a clearly, clearly, clearly sad song, but there's this one lyric at the top of the second verse that we kind of breezed by. We're going,
okay,
back into the left of it.
Okay.
And it reminded me a little bit of what I now consider to be the saddest song as an adult.
Really?
Same old song.
Just a drop of water in an endless sea.
Ooh,
now, we
so
already
true.
Know that Kerry Livgren is ready to lift a lyric from another source. Dust in the Wind.
Lifted, you're saying he lifted that
lifted,
from a book of Native American poetry.
Lifted from
poetry.
Native American poetry.
Okay.
When you hear the song lyric, same old song,
mm-hmm,
the first song you think of is not Dust in the Wind.
I hadn't thought of that, but when you just said it, just listening to you say it, then yes, I can think of,
yeah,
same old song.
I mean, it's just the perfect song. It has like one of the greatest openings of all time. I think a lot of people like wouldn't know it's a Four Tops song because the Four Tops like haven't ended up being as famous as the Temptations. So I think a lot of people would guess it's the Temptations, but it's the Four Tops. The drum fill just crushes. And like, this song is so happy, right? It's just a happy song about happy, fun stuff. Sung by some guys that are dancing and snapping, right? It's a happy song. Like, I always thought this was a happy song. And then I'm embarrassed to admit how I realized it was a sad song. But probably 15 years ago, I heard a cover of this song, Evan.
Okay.
And I have it in the soundboard. I've hidden who played it, so you won't know. Okay, so this is the secret version of the same old song that revealed to me that it is the saddest song probably ever.
It's the same old song.
It's the same old song.
With a different meaning.
Oh, it's so sad.
Is this Iron and Wine?
It's an Iron and Wine cover of the same old song. I don't think this is on an album. Like, this is kind of like a sentimental fool am I. Oh, this just brings tears to my eyes. And once I heard the Iron and Wine version, mm-hmm. I could never hear the Four Tops version the same way again. Like, mm-hmm. how deeply sad it is to like have this song that brings you such joy that sounds presumably like the song the Four Tops are singing, like a happy song. And all of a sudden, the person leaves, and you're sad when the song comes on without them. I was at a wedding in probably, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, and this came on during the dance party because, like,
oh, the Iron and Wine version came on?
Yes, they put on the Iron and Wine version. No. They put on the Four Tops version. But at the time, like, I was single. I'd just been through a bad breakup. I had to, like, leave the wedding. Like, I came back, but I had to, like, take a moment. Like, the Four Tops song hit. It's happy. The drum fill hits. Everyone's dancing. And I was just like,
you knew too much.
I knew too much.
You're a simple man. You needed it spelled out to you by Iron and Wine.
By Iron and Wine.
They had to play it with their real sad boy vibes for you to get it.
Basically,
but once you got it, you couldn't unhear it.
I mean, I'm burning Kansas for making a version of Dust in the Wind that explains it out, that spells it out for a 12-year-old. But basically, I needed Iron and Wine to spell it out for me as an adult with a 12-year-old, hey, this is a really sad version. Hey, listen to the lyrics. This is sad. But then I couldn't unknow it, and I came to see the same old song by the Four Tops as being like the ultimate sad song for an adult. It's like the Casablanca of songs that like you had this life, mm-hmm. you thought this life was going to be yours, mm-hmm. and it's not yours anymore, and you're never going to get it back, but you're always going to be reminded of it, and everyone else is going to sound happy. It's not sad for everyone else. It's only sad for you. So as an adult, the Four Tops song has become so much sadder to me than Dust in the Wind. And like, and just that approach to writing, that it's like sad lyrics, happy sound,
mm-hmm.
that was really takes me back about the fact that they use that exact same lyric in the Kansas song. Like, are they doing that intentionally? Do they like the Four Tops? Is just like an accidental crib? Like, there's no other mention of a song anywhere in here. Like, same old song, just a drop of water in an endless sea. Like, I don't know. You could have just made that whole two lines about water, right? You're from Kansas. Make it about the Cuyahoga River or something.
I don't know. I don't think these guys know about beaches and oceans.
They are from Kansas.
They're from Kansas. It's more than a full day's drive.
They want
any body of water you could call an endless sea.
They wanted to write two lines about a sea, but they didn't have enough knowledge about seas to do two lines.
I do believe they know a lot about dust and wind, for sure.
I bet they do know enough about Kansas to know that the Cuyahoga River is not in Kansas. I'm like 90% sure I'm wrong there, but I also cannot name a single river that is in Kansas. You know what? I bet the Platte.
Cuyahoga,
I bet the Platte
is Ohio, man. That's
I bet
an
the
Ohio
Platte river.
River
is in Kansas.
The Platte River is a major river in the state of Nebraska.
No.
Close, Pally.
Maybe there's just not a river in Kansas. Maybe there's just not any rivers there.
I don't think so. I don't think they know about bodies of water in Kansas.
So when I think about the punch up for Dust in the Wind, Evan, I want to think about what version of Dust in the Wind can still touch the heart of a 12-year-old, but also be looked at by someone in their 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s as not being corny pap.
Okay.
Is pap the correct word to use in this context?
Sure.
Pap is like something that is corny, right?
I don't know. It sounds a little dirty.
So how do we take that corny Kansas pap and turn it from a weedy mash into something that's fermented into a finer ale, a finer wine that true philosophers can appreciate and not the fictional Socrates who's being impressed by Bill and Ted?
I'm into it, man. Let's sift the wheat from the chaff and leave the stems on the threshing floor. Carry on, my wayward man. Are you pitching me on a punch-up, or are you about to play a punch for me?
I have one almost done. It's halfway done. I already have an idea in mind. I'm not going to tell you about it. I think I can finish it over the weekend. We're recording this on a Friday.
Okay.
I think by Monday or Tuesday, I can be playing you my punch-up of Dust in the Wind that is going to be at least 20% better than the original Kansas song. Although I think the Kansas song grew on me during this episode, because even though it's a little corny, it still hits for me.
You know what? It really matters when the singer can sing, man. It just, you can get some corny ass stuff in there, and if it sound good, it hit you right in the breastbone. I don't know if I can wait that long to listen to your punch up, but when I think ahead to my Monday or Tuesday self, I'm going to have spent the whole weekend thinking about my death and the insignificance of my life, and I'll be a different man. I'll be looking back.
I know it seems like a long time, 3 or 4 days till Monday or Tuesday, Evan, but if you close your eyes only for a moment, you're going to open them up. The punch is going to be here. You're going to feel great. This song cuts both ways. Could be happy.
Yeah. Nothing lasts forever, and definitely not a weekend.
Yeah. I mean, the other like flip side of the song that I think about is like, I don't know, I feel like whenever people talk about George Harrison's All Things Must Pass, they're always like,
okay,
don't worry, man, like some real shit's going on in your life, but all things must pass. They're always talking about like how things are going to get better. It's like, well,
like, yeah, like all bad things go away.
Yeah, George.
But this song is about how all good things go away.
Yeah, George Harrison, but I think George, it's reductive both ways. George Harrison is not saying, don't worry, all this bad stuff is going to pass and your life is going to be happy again. He's saying it from like a very Eastern philosophy, like all the things will pass, the good
you're
things and the bad
You're calling it Eastern.
Things.
I call it Kansan.
Yes.
The Kansan philosophy of all things must
pass.
It's
very Bill and Teddian. So, but that also, you know, what version of this Kansas song acknowledges that being dust in the wind is bad, but also maybe it's a little good because there's some stuff in your life that it would be great if the wind just blew that dust right out of your life. You picking up what I'm putting down?
Yeah.
Bill and Ted did not get there with Socrates, but I imagine that Socrates eventually got there.
Yeah, parent-teacher conferences, you can blow those right away.
Okay, we are going to take a 3-day break, and we will be back.
3 days for us.
3 days for us. For you, it'll be just the blink of an eye.
Only for a moment.
Only for a moment, and we'll be back.
And all these ad breaks
with the punch
will pass
up
before your eyes.
Wow. Wind sound. Put a wind sound in here.
Here. I have a wind sound right here.
Utah!
You closed your eyes only for a moment, but the moment's gone, and we are back with the punch-up for Kansas's Dust in the Wind.
Andrew, I'm coming into this blind. You went off and punched this thing up. I'm dying to hear it. What do I need to know before you slap me with it?
I went off. I want to say you and I have a running doc of songs we want to do, and this was kind of a subheading to the original Kansas song we wanted to do, Carry On My Wayward Son. And I just want to put a pin in that. I know we can't just be constantly punching up Kansas songs from the late 70s, early 80s on this podcast, just because that's what we were listening to when we were 11 and 14 years old in Radford, Virginia. But maybe in 40 or 50 episodes, we will have earned another Kansas punch-up, and we can do Carry On My Wayward Son. I think that would be too hard for me to do by myself because there's such a raging organ solo. It'd have to be a dual effort. But this was when I looked at it on the list. I said, Dust in the Wind, this is in the pocket for me. And I think the version I made is indisputably better than the original version.
Okay. No further ado.
I mean, I think the only thing you need to recall from our conversation several days ago is that, you know, we talked about that when you're 11 or 12, the song really, really hits you in the feels.
Yeah.
Because it has the sad lyrics and the sad song, the fingerpick sad song. But maybe as you grow older and mature, it can be, it can maybe be a little cloying. You can kind of say, like, is this leaning too far into, like, the kind of, like, whoa, that's deep zone?
Yeah, it's extremely deep for a teenager.
So I thought, what if I could make this sound like the most fun song ever while also still being deeply sad, lyrically?
So you're trying to do a trick. You're trying to do a fun song that tricks you into being sad or that teaches you sad philosophy.
Yes, it hooks you in with happy music. You tap your foot to it. Maybe you even dance to it. And it's only later on in life that you realize I was tricked into listening to something really deep. And I tried to, let's just say, I tried to learn from the best in doing this.
Dust in the wind, somewhere I have.
It just gets your hips moving, you know?
I should have seen this coming.
Dreams are dust in the wind. Try to pretend, but oh my. Dreams are dust in the wind.
I should have seen this coming when you were talking about same old song. Oh, it's dark, but I'm loving it. I'm learning a lot. Okay, you kept in the string break, which is great. He's giving me some time.
You still
time.
Got the violin guy with the long hair and the
eye patch.
He's
giving me some time to absorb that bit from
Ozymandias. Yeah, so baritone sax thing now, too.
Nothing lasts forever except the earth and sky. They're breaking up never.
Baseline. Oh. 100% you're still getting on the dance floor at a wedding while this is playing, and you're saying to yourself, like, they're probably gonna get divorced.
Like cancer said, dust in the wind. Oh my, dreams are dust in the wind.
I'm sitting down with this. Bravo. Oh, my hat's off. Like I said, I should have seen this coming when you were talking about same old song earlier and tying it back to the lyric in the Kansas song, but I did not see this one coming. You nailed a lot of things in here, man. Great job, because you also cleared up, I heard it, you cleared up a crucial mistake in the Kansas song that the earth and sky...
Yes.
Is the only thing that lasts forever.
Yeah, major astronomical mistake.
Neil deGrasse Tyson would be livid if he was really thinking about those Kansas lyrics.
He would go off.
He would go off about the impermanence of all matter.
I mean, I think he would potentially even suggest, are the earth and sky even separate if you zoom out enough?
And you cleaned it up, man. You brought in a supernova and you tied a little bow on it.
But also, you know, we know that Kansas cribs dust in the wind from the Book of Native American Poetry. Mm-hmm. We know they might have cribbed.
And the Native Americans as well also cribbed the idea from sand itself.
Or Bill and Ted. Unclear. We don't know.
Bill and Ted may have visited them.
They may have visited the Native Americans. We can also guess that same old song line in the Kansas song is kind of out of place. Did they crib that from the Four Tops? Like, I'm going to go with probably. So I've learned cribbing from the best now. When I was working up this Kansas punch, I just said, you know what? Mm-hmm. Why not work in a little bit of Shelley's greatest poem, bring in some Ozymandias? You know, the careful listener heard, look at.
I heard it. Look at my works, ye mighty, and despair. I heard it. That's how I felt when you were still there. Okay, man. I think this is a plus punch. Mission accomplished. You took a sad song and you took out the sad music so it wasn't hitting a double note. You know, you do sad twice and, yes, and maybe it's a little too on the nose. You made it a lot more subtle with this.
Yeah.
Very danceable. That's the subtle sadness.
I mean,
you're
just
dancing and crying.
The wedding I talked about that I was out on the dance floor listening to
the fictional,
to this song,
hypothetical wedding.
The real wedding. I talked about it before the break that I was at a real wedding when this song came out. And I just was like, man, it was after a bad breakup. I was like, I need a moment. I had to go out to the parking lot.
When you heard
cool off,
the Four
the
Tops
original,
come on.
Yeah, the original same old song. The advantage to this version is everyone would be happy on the dance floor. And then everyone would need to go out to the parking lot and take a quiet moment. But they'd be doing it together. It wouldn't just be one guy who's like, wow, I just had a bad breakup. I've got to go out to the parking lot by myself and just like look up at the stars. Everybody would be like, this is fun. We're at a wedding. And then they'd be like, well, we're all going to die. They'd go out to the parking lot, chill out for a little bit, you know, just take a long inward breath of cool, crisp mountain air, and just go back into dance to a happy song.
That's too bad, man. You should have done this punch up a few months ago, and I feel like this would be the closing credits of the movie Don't Look Up. And you'd be at the Oscars with an Oscar-nominated song.
Yes, and everyone would like the song.
Okay, man, let's roll right into the walk-in music. I want to do a little preamble to the entire segment, which is to tell our audience, we're just making an in-pod announcement here, that Andrew is going to be out for a few weeks because he is going on paternity leave.
That's
Andrew's
right.
Becoming a dad.
That's right. I mean, we were talking about that Dust in the Wind does not acknowledge that when things change, it's not always for the worse.
That's right.
This is a good change. This is a good change in my life.
Andrew's not a dad yet. At the time of this record. But he's going to go on leave because the due date be a-coming.
I mean, the likelihood is that by the time this episode airs, I'm already a dad. It is a coin flip. It is a coin flip if I will be a dad when this episode comes out. So I'll be on paternity leave for a couple weeks. I think you and I will be trying to bank a couple episodes that maybe we can run while I'm on paternity leave. You might be doing a couple episodes by yourself. We'll see. We're playing
it by
ear.
And you don't get any say in it. I'm going rogue. I'm just going to be posting all sorts of stuff to this feed.
You're right. I'm on paternity leave, so if I say anything about it, then I'm a jerk. Not to you, but to my own growing family. I immediately become that bad dad with a cell phone in a 90s movie who's like, honey, I'll be at your game.
I've got to take this call.
I promise I'll be at your game on time after I finish recording my podcast. Then I get to the game late, and I'm yelling at my brother on the phone about uploading something to our RSS feed that I wasn't expecting.
In all sincerity, I know I'll be talking to you hundreds of hours while you're on leave, but I hope you have an extremely wonderful few weeks away from podcasting and work in general, and I hope you're just living a blissed out life at home with your family. Congratulations.
I'm really excited. I mean, in case you're just over the moon about it, I can't describe it. We're very excited about it.
In the spirit of doing sincere things in this ostensibly comedy podcast, I've chosen my walk-in music with you becoming a dad in mind.
What is your walk-in in music?
There's two reasons I picked this song. The first reason, well, there's three reasons. One, I love it. Number two, because the first lyrics you hear are baby, 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 baby. So that's what I want you to think about. And
when I'm on my paternity leave.
Yeah.
Babies and babies only.
You're just going to be thinking about the word baby, and then I want you to think about this song, because baby, 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 baby. And thirdly, the song is about all my life I've waited for someone like you.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
and
man.
And it could be just a baby. instead of, you know, a baby.
I gotta put this on the baby music playlist. This is good.
Just imagine looking at your newborn baby going,
I've never heard that intro before.
The radio cut starts here. Yeah. The radio cut starts here. This is All My Life by Casey and JoJo.
The Casey and JoJo. I'm just nuts about this song. We're listening to Kansas, and they were like, get the violins in here. They're like, we need a violin player on this. Worked on Dustin Lin.
So that's it, man. My walk-in song is Casey and JoJo singing All My Life. Just peak 90s R&B ballad. I love this song. It's awesome to sing along with, amazing harmonies. But I guess what I'm technically doing here is writing a walk-in song for you. I'm picking a walk-in song for you to walk in to a bottle feeding session.
3 a.m., baby. 3 a.m., put me on the clock.
That I finally found you.
Oh my life. This song is so good. You're really putting words in my mouth here about how I feel about my upcoming baby, but they're true.
It's all true.
This is how I feel about my baby.
Okay, thanks for listening to my whole spiel. That's the most sincere scenario I've brought yet. Who knows what next week could bring when you're away? It's going to get truly wild.
Wow. Walk-in music to dadhood. A true gift, and I'm going to use it. But I will say my journey to dadhood has been a wild one, Evan. Mm-hmm. And this gift of my dad walk-in music is relatively low, very low, on the list of gifts that I have received from you and your family personally.
Is there something you want to share?
The short short version of this is it's a long tale. I mentioned before, 2 years ago, my wife was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. It was a very, very unlucky thing to happen to you when you're her age. I think it's something like 3, 4, or 5% of people under 40 are diagnosed with ovarian cancer.
You mean 3 or 4% of cancer patients?
Yes. Yes. That is what I mean. I mean that if you look at all ovarian cancer patients, a very, very small percent of them are under 40. Most of them are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. And Casey's diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and that sucks, and we're really unlucky, but we were very lucky that we had frozen some embryos before she became sick. We're even more lucky that your wife, our sister-in-law, in an incredibly loving and gracious gesture, came to us about a year and a half ago and told us she wanted to be our surrogate. That was the only way we could have kids anymore. And that's what has happened. We're about to have a kid, and your wife is 37 weeks pregnant with our child, which is hard to wrap your head around it. I'm not sure all of our relatives totally understand what has happened. but that's it. So...
That's it. You're letting the cat out of the bag.
Yeah. It's crazy. There's really nothing that Case and I will ever be able to say that is a, dare I say it, worthy thank you to you and Sarah. I've told you this before, but I remember early on when it was after Sarah was already pregnant. I don't know, Casey and I said something to you and Sarah about like, oh my God, like we can't believe that you guys are doing this for us. It's so amazing. And I think Sarah said like, oh, we're doing this for your daughter. Like, of course we're doing it for you,
yeah,
but
it's
really,
not for
this,
you.
Yeah,
it's
but
for
this
her.
Is a gift for our niece, and that was pretty mind expanding for I think me and Casey.
Yeah, well,
pretty mind expanding.
Yeah, thanks for talking about it. It's you know, for me, it's been a front row seat to, you know, one of the most beautiful things that I've been able to witness. So.
yeah, it's wild. Not a lot of people who do surrogacy get to do it this way, and it's been really special to get to see you guys regularly and yell at Sarah's stomach and put together, you know, a lot of the, like, I was talking about the baby playlist. Uh-huh. You know, for other people, it's like, oh, I'll play that music around the house during the pregnancy, and then I'll.
You mean so the child the in utero is listening to your music?
Yeah, and then the baby's born. And I think for us as parents through surrogacy, like, it was even more important to us because, you know, your kid isn't always hearing you, and you want to, you know, we put together the playlist, and would every time we updated it, send it to you and Sarah, mm-hmm. we would just, you know, record our own voices and send it to you guys. And I'm sure you've heard this playlist almost as much as me and Casey. Although I think like around month 4 or 5, Casey bought like a set of like, they're kind of like sticky headphones that you can like put on a pregnant
tummy
person's
headphones.
Headphones. So like you've heard the playlist songs less than you would have had to before the existence of the tummy headphones. My walking song, I think, is one of the original like 10 or 15 songs that was on the baby playlist mm-hmm. for our girl. We know we're expecting a girl. And I think it's a little like father, like daughter, because when you hear the synth up front,
let me hit it.
It's kind of reminiscent of my original walking song, Baba O'Reilly. Oh, very Baba O'Reilly. Oh, so just imagine me and Casey's little girl coming through the door. Maybe she's in a stroller. I'm hoping with sunglasses on.
You mean this is a walk-in song for a baby?
It's a walk-in song for a baby. You picked a walk-in song for me. I'm picking a walk-in song for a baby. You just hear that sparkly synth. See a baby with sunglasses. Oh, it's one of my favorite Fleetwood Mac songs. I mean, I know it's crazy to say that maybe this song is better than any Stevie Nicks song, this Christine McVie song, but like, is it?
I don't have to rank Fleetwood Mac songs one over the other. I'm willing to just sit here and revel in this awesome tune and recast it in my mind as a walk-in song for a baby. It's beautiful.
I want to be with this baby everywhere. It's time for my paternity leave, baby.
I didn't tear up through your whole intro until you just said, "I want to be with this baby everywhere," and I'm crying.
Yeah, I mean the baby playlist hits hard. You cannot listen to the baby playlist and not cry. Let me tell you.
Oh man, we spent the whole episode talking about how Dust in the Wind was too cheesy, and now we're ending the episode with me just openly weeping.
Oh man. I've done a couple sessions in here after work when I'll just come in and I'll sing along to the baby playlist songs like a karaoke track, and then I'll just send them to you and Sarah, so it's like the same songs, but it's like our baby's dad is singing them. I haven't done this one yet. I'll have to do it, but first I have to gather myself. This has been your favorite comedy podcast about how when things change, they're not always bad. Sometimes they're good.
Yep, sometimes things change.
All we are is dust in the wind, dudes.
Note to self, I'm going to go back before we print this episode and record a sad, moody version of the theme song so we can play it.
At the end of this?
Yeah, at the end of this. We can leave this in the episode and see if I make good on this promise to make a sensitive version of the
theme
song.
Yeah, it's not a sad version. It's a sensitive version. It's a sensitive
version. Maybe Kansas inspired.
Wow. I mean, do what I did. Instead of having to compose a whole music bed, just put our track over the Kansas karaoke track.
Okay, Andrew. Well, with that, I'm going to send you off from this pod for a couple weeks. To you, I say, bon voyage. Try not to think about microphones or audio recording or whatever. Go off. Don't think about content creation.
I'm halfway through bunching up a Hoobastank song.
Oh, no.
I can only hope and pray that I finish that before my child arrives so that I'm not just sitting there tapping a pin on a table while holding a swaddled baby thinking, Hoobastank, 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 Hoobastank. Because if you say Hoobastank seven times while holding a baby,
the baby turns into Hoobastank?
The baby lays a Hoobastank.
Mm-hmm. The baby's diaper is full of poop that stank.
That's an educational dad joke moment for me right there. I'm learning from the best.
So I send you off and I say to you, bon voyage, and to the listeners, you know, watch this space. If we miss a week, it's because Andrew's on leave and also my wife birthed a baby and I may be supporting her. But if we get some eps coming out on Thursdays during this time, they are going to be zany. I tell you, you don't know what's going to happen over here.
I've heard rumors of guest hosts with you, Evan. There might be some solo episodes. You and I might this. I mean, this is kind of like a time travel episode because whenever this comes out, we recorded in March. You and I might try to sneak in another recording session or two in the next week or two. Space those out, but I mean, I'm not going to be watching the RSS feed.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. You're going to be up at 3 a.m. bottle feeding, just thirsty for content.
Yes, honey. I'm going to be there in time for your soccer game. Right at 4 p.m. I'm leaving work early. I'm wrapping up with a big client at noon. It's their last review of the project.
This bad movie is a little too real.
So one last time travel exercise here, Evan, to honor Bill and Ted. You're going to press the space bar to play the theme song. I'm not even going to be here, and we're going to find out. Is the theme song sad, or is it normal?
3, 2, 1.
It's Punch Up the Jam. Only for an hour, it's Punch Up the Jam. All these songs pass before our ears of curiosity. Punch Up the Jam. All we are is punching up jams. Punching up jams. All we are is punching up jams.
That was a HeadGum Original.